It's absolutely critical to have a fine scope, a reasonable scope, well-defined for the first project. But the most well-defined, sort of well-scoped project is, in another way, the biggest. Because really what we're talking about, if you're looking at what should your first opportunity be with predictive AI that you want to pursue, it should be your largest scale operation that stands to improve the most, and that even an incremental improvement provides a tremendous bottom line.
You're listening to the ISF podcast for your organization's better cybersecurity. Your host, ISF CEO Steve Durbin, is an expert in leadership, business culture transformation, and cyber strategies for today's top enterprises. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. Today, Steve is in conversation with artificial intelligence expert Eric Siegel. A former professor at Columbia University, Eric is the founder of the long-running Machine Learning Week conference series and a best-selling author. His latest book, The AI Playbook, looks at how businesses outside big tech can leverage machine learning to grow. Eric and Steve discuss the differences between generative and predictive AI, the most effective ways to implement AI into an organization's operations, and how we might expect this technology to be useful in the future.
So, Eric, lovely to see you. Thanks very much indeed for joining me on the podcast today.
Yeah, my pleasure.
How are things?
Things are good, yeah. This is quite a time. It's there's a lot of confusion around there, the term AI. At the same time, though, you know, predictive AI or predictive analytics, the sort of established enterprise use cases, are continuing to grow as they have been for decades. So it's an amazing time. I think there's a lot of, you know, the advent of generative AI has kind of brought the field into a whole new level of visibility and awareness, but only awareness of its existence, not really an understanding of what it is. So there's a lot of clarifying needing to be done out there, I believe.
Yeah, and hopefully we can do some of that in this particular session of the podcast, because you've been really working in this space now for quite some while, machine learning, AI. You were at Columbia, where obviously you were on the more sort of academic side of things, but also, as you alluded to there, been working with a lot of companies around the world in terms of deploying machine learning and latterly predictive, not to say having written about it as well with a number of books that no doubt some of our listeners will have come across and will have read. So just to start off, you know, from your standpoint, where do you think we are at in terms of maturity when it comes to the evolution of machine learning into AI, and as you mentioned there, into predictive and generative AI? Where are we on that sort of growth curve, if you like?
So it's such a funny time, because predictive and generative are really apples and oranges. They're both built on machine learning, which learns from data to predict. But generative isn't a reference to really something specific in terms of the technology. It's just how you're using it, which is to generate new content items. So writing a first draft in human language like English, or of code, or creating a first image or video, these endeavors typically need a human in the loop to review everything that it's generated. They're not autonomous. And the question is how autonomous could they be?
Right.
Could they get to the point where, you know, you allow a customer-facing service chatbot to interact directly with that end consumer and expect them to be able to get a high quality interaction the same as they would with the best potential human consumer agent? And I think within very controlled, specific domain areas, that will be achieved, but it's still going to take several years. The broader narrative, though, is about, is this thing going to really become human-like in its capabilities in general? And although it's so seemingly human-like, amazingly so, I'm a big skeptic about that general level of human-level capabilities and whether we're approaching it. In the meantime, predictive, where you predict who's going to click, buy, lie, or die in order to target all the operational decisions in marketing, fraud detection, credit risk management, which satellite to investigate that might run out of battery, where to drill for oil, pretty much any large-scale existing operation, this is the kind of, quote, AI that you turn to, predictive AI, predictive analytics, where you're predicting for each individual the outcome or behavior that would help drive these decisions. That's the technology you turn to improve pretty much any of your existing largest scale operations. And that's what's been going on now for decades. Established track record. And yet still, even in that realm, only the tip of the iceberg has really been tapped. There's a lot of failed projects, and that's why I wrote this new book, The AI Playbook, because we need an organizational practice to make sure that we're sort of planning the project, not just technically, but organizationally and operationally, so that it actually gets deployed and makes a difference and actually improves operations. And in general, the awareness and understanding of it and how it can be integrated into organizations is still only improving. So to summarize, I'd say on the predictive side, there's a lot of maturity that we've gained, but we're still really quite early. In the generative side, we don't really know what it is. It's so early, and there's sort of this elephant of the room, which I think boils down to how autonomous can these things operate? And I think the public narrative, the hype wants to say we're headed towards general human level capabilities. These things are going to take over entire roles and responsibilities, take on really broad-scoped human tasks. I think that that's overkill. It's a mismanagement of expectations. And the real question is, okay, well, exactly how far is it going to get and how can we deploy it other than what it does now extremely well, which is first drafts.
Okay. Let's stick with predictive for a minute and we'll come to the generative piece a little bit later. But the predictive one intrigues me because, as you say, you know, not hugely new, been around for a little while. And yet there seems to be a lot more interest, people talking to me a lot about, you know, the fact that they've got their predictive analytics program now that's just starting and they're investing a lot of money in it because they want to be able to predict what people are going to do. But there are a number of different components to that, right? And you know, as you said in your book, you take people through some of the pitfalls, some of the good practice in terms of setting up a predictive program that is going to deliver some value. And one of the things I was interested to read in there was you emphasize the need for small. What I mean by that is the quick win. You know, don't try and boil the ocean on day one. Let's start with just a kettle load of water because we know what we're going to get there. So talk to me a little bit about that. What does good practice look like in terms of setting up one of these predictive programs? Because people are investing a tremendous amount of money in them.
It's absolutely critical to have a fine scope, a reasonable scope, well-defined for the first project. But the most well-defined, sort of well-scoped project is, in another way, the biggest. Because really what we're talking about, if you're looking at what should your first opportunity be with predictive AI that you want to pursue, it should be your largest scale operation that stands to improve the most and that even an incremental improvement provides a tremendous bottom line. So whether that's in targeting marketing or fraud detection or any of these other kinds of operations I've been mentioning, you have to start with and this is really the antidote to hype, is what's the concrete value proposition? In the case of predictive, it's defined by two things, what's predicted and what's done about it. So predict who's going to buy in order to target who gets contacted with marketing, who's going to cancel, to predict who gets contacted with an incentive to be retained. That's another marketing application. Who's going to be a good debtor, pay their bills? Then the decision is to approve them as a credit applicant. Who's going to file high insurance claims, then alter their pricing accordingly for an insurance policy if they're applying for a new one? So it's always that pair, what's predicted and what's done about it. That's a very clear place to start in terms of scoping it. And you want to pick the thing where there's the lowest hanging fruit, with the highest potential value gain, but that because you're applying this systematically over and over again, these decisions based on predictions, what's predicted and then what's done about it. That's the antidote to the hype. That's the clear value propositions. That's where we have track record in predictive analytics. But yes, there's so many different ways it can be applied. Start with the one and only one as a first step that promises the highest returns.
And one of the things that I think people often forget is that the output value of predictive is only ever going to be as good as the integrity of the data that it's using, right? And one of the things that has always bothered me from a security standpoint is integrity of data. And when we move into the whole world of artificial intelligence, doesn't matter whether it's predictive, whether it's machine learning, whether it's generative, whatever it might be, the light is really being shone on that data component, right? So what sort of advice can you give to people who perhaps are listening to this, they've got a predictive analytics program perhaps that's underway, and they want to make sure that the data that they've got is the right data, basically?
Well, the main thing you need and the main requirement you need is data that has both enough positive and negative examples. So both the thing you're trying to predict and the previous customers who did cancel and others that did not. Transactions that are fraudulent and others that are not. Typically, the sort of more important or rare thing, the fraudulent transactions, the customers that cancel, the high-value customers that will respond, the greatest risk of debtors, those more rare cases, are, in a sense, are more important to predict. And because they're more rare, that's where you might not have enough examples. So that's the main thing, is you need both positive and negative examples from which to learn. But it turns out, in terms of the integrity of the data, you know, whether there's noise or errors in the data, first and foremost, the machine learning methods turn out to be really robust in the face of error, so long as whatever that source of error has some uniformity and you expect it to continue only to the same amount in the future. Let me break that down to two things. So this whole like clean up your data, make sure it doesn't have errors, it sounds like potentially one of the most boring topics, but let me make a couple points that actually it's kind of fascinating when you think about it. First of all, in most of these kinds of use cases, at least the ones I've been referring to, you don't expect high confidence. You can only predict better than guessing, which turns out to be more than sufficient to drive an improvement to the bottom line. So who's going to click buy, lie, or die, or commit an act of fraud, or turn out to cancel, or be a bad debtor? These are human behaviors for those examples, or it could be a corporate client, or it could be a mechanism like a satellite, or the wheel of a train that might fail. But whatever it is, we don't have clairvoyance or magic crystal ball. We can't expect our computers to either. So it's about tipping the odds in these numbers games and predicting better than guessing. So it's not, no matter how good the data is and how devoid of wrong values and those types of errors, you're still going to have that limitation. There's still a ceiling. No matter how advanced the method is, it's not going to become supernatural, right? There's this thing called chaos theory, which basically says that there's, even if you knew all of the neurons of every cell of the person's brain, you wouldn't necessarily be able to predict very far into the future. And of course, we don't. So it's always limited data anyway. Now, there are exceptions. If you're predicting, you know, is there a traffic light in this picture? Some of the things that humans can do, computers now with deep learning can do just as well, if not better, and very confidently say, yes, there is a traffic light or there isn't. Even when there's lots of noise, you know, for some reason, there's like smudge on the lens of the camera or whatever, just like a human can, the computer's robust to those errors. But what kind of errors did I just refer to? I referred to the input to the model. So the model is the thing that's learned from the data, and it takes inputs that describe or characterize the one case for which you want to predict. An image that might have a traffic light, all the factors, both demographic and behavioral, about a customer who may or may not cancel their subscription. Those are the inputs. And it turns out when I say it's really robust to errors or to noise, it's in those inputs. And it very much is, and it's going to tend to only make an incremental smidgen of a difference in sort of the predictive performance, which already is not going to be a magic crystal ball for most of these cases anyway. Where it does matter is in what's called the dependent variable, the labels. So as I mentioned, the main data requirement is enough positive and negative examples. You need to know which of those examples are positive and which are negative.
Right.
Those are the labels from which you're learning. This part of machine learning is called supervised machine learning because it's the learning process is supervised by way of those labels. A bunch of examples where you already know the answer. You don't need to predict for them. They're historical or already established or human labeled. But there are cases from which to learn. If the labels are wrong, you're dead in the water, not only for the training process, the development of the model, but also for evaluating how good the model is because you hold aside some of those labeled cases in order to evaluate it, to test it. So that's the thing. We're not going to predict like a magic crystal ball, but we're going to predict a lot better than guessing, but we're not going to have any idea of what our progress is unless we do iron out what might be any source of noise or errors in the labels.
Okay. That's a good pointer for people, isn't it? Because I think very often they can get distracted by the fact that, you know, the data has to be absolutely pristine and we've got to preserve the integrity of it completely. But good point there about the fact that the machines are sufficiently capable to take away some of that error. Let's move on now to where we were just a little while ago, which is generative. So generative AI. And you expressed a view there about how you saw that developing and evolving. If you sort of, you know, spring forward, say 5 years, where do you think we're going to be with generative AI? What do you think the potential for it is?
Well, I kind of briefly alluded earlier. I do think if you define the scope in a really finite way, so let's say this is going to be an interactive chat where you can chat the way you would with a human and use whatever arcane turns of phrase and colloquialisms and casual conversation and all the way we speak in metaphors and all that. And you want to be able to do that and expect it to have the right answer as often as your best human expert, and expect you to only tell you wrong information as infrequently as with your best human expert. Well, if it's a limited scope, let's say it's only a chat bot that's meant to help people who are out on the field fixing laundry machines. So it's a very finite scoped topic. Or let's say everything about wine, the history of wine, how wine is made, the current wines, and I don't know anything about that stuff myself, but you know, you have some kind of a defined thing. This is my kind of hunch, is that it will get to a measured, proven level of capability where there becomes kind of consensus, hey, this is reliable. That's what I believe. But that level of reliability for an unfettered, open set of topics as your normal human would, and capabilities like any, your ultimate virtual assistant, for example, that sort of wide scoped, I don't see us approaching that. And that starts to become very close to what people refer to as artificial general intelligence, which basically means a computer capable of anything a human can. The definition is usually any intellectual task, kind of differentiate from robotics, so kind of just a technical difference. Basically, all the hype, the stated purpose of OpenAI, most of the big famous people who are making a lot of excited noise in this space is around the idea that we're headed towards that. And let's call it what it is, artificial humans. Mm-hmm. I believe that that's a ghost story or a fairy tale, depending on whether you're taking the apocalyptic view or the utopian. I believe it's the novel that Mary Shelley would have written if she knew about algorithms.
Right. So you don't see us evolving down that particular road.
I mean, I don't believe that. The way I put it is that we're not, despite how amazingly, seemingly human-like it is, that doesn't represent concrete steps towards AGI. I don't mean to say that AGI is theoretically impossible, but speculating about it is the same as it was 100 years ago.
Right. Okay. So let me ask you now then about the need for control in the space around regulation. Now, on the podcast, I've spoken to a number of different people about regulation in the AI space. So particularly around, we had one, for instance, where we're talking about the EU's AI Act, number of different things coming out of the United States as well in terms of executive orders around the use of AI and so on. My own view is that irrespective of how quickly or how fully AI develops, we're probably at a point where we do need to have some firm guidelines from a regulatory standpoint around the use of it, the development of it. What's your take on it?
I think that technology needs to be regulated. I really, really wish people stopped talking about regulation in terms of, quote, AI. AI is an amorphous term. It can mean whatever you want. It's ill-defined. The word intelligence is very problematic when you try to apply it to a machine. If you're talking about these predictive use cases, fine. If you're talking about generative, that's well-defined. Talking about machine learning, it's well-defined. So regulation's already hard enough without muddying the waters by using this very ill-defined term, which just has an amorphous, constantly changing meaning, and it depends on the context so much, not to mention that it carries with it this impractical mythology of approaching artificial humans. However, within technology, autonomous weapons, the predictive use cases that we've been talking about, which really make a difference, and they're life differentiating decisions about whether you're approved for credit and whether you're approved for freedom by a parole board for predictive policing. These things make a huge difference. And they're very well-specified uses of technology. I do believe they should be regulated. I take that stuff very seriously. I've published a dozen op-eds on different kinds of discriminatory or biased predictive model behavior that we have potential for and that some actually campaign for. Those are, I put a URL that goes to them, Civil Rights Data. civilrightsdata.com. I'll get to my dozen in the San Francisco Chronicle and the Scientific American blog. My views on those topics.
And do you think we're getting dangerously close to the wrong kind of regulation in this space? Or do you think that we just simply don't have enough? So, it's, you know, give us a perspective.
Oh, I would definitely say, choosing between the two, we don't have enough. I think that when we do regulate on, quote, AI, it's very easy to say, oh, I'm not AI. I'm just a statistical model that predicts this outcome. And then all of a sudden, what did you mean by AI? So it's just that that's one of the main problems is by calling it AI, it becomes ineffectual, right? Because it's not referring to anything particular.
So Eric, it's been great talking to you. That's been a really good run through, I think, of how machine learning, artificial intelligence has been evolving. Really good insights into some of the predictive elements that I'm sure people will find very useful and always interesting as well to hear people's perspectives on where it's going to go and how it might evolve. So thank you very much for sharing those. And also, of course, for providing some of that additional insight there around some of the op-eds that you've written, which I'm sure people will go and take a look at because regulation or the lack of it continues to be a big talking point. So thank you very much for taking the time to just share some of those views.
Yeah, my pleasure, Steve. Thanks so much for having me on the show.
We'll be back next week with a new episode. Remember, if you want access to the specially curated list of episodes with Steve in conversation with women in leadership, send a screenshot of your rating and review of the ISF podcast to tavia.gilbert@securityforum.org. Become a member of the ISF today by getting in touch with Steve directly at steve.durbin@securityforum.org or on LinkedIn at Steve Durbin. Check out all our media and resources. All of it is there to support you at securityforum.org. Don't miss the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, sharing conversations with members about the real-world applications of ISF research. The ISF podcast is produced by Talkbox Productions and Tavia Gilbert. Thanks for listening.